man the highest in all creation. It's spoken of very highly by all scriptures. All saying that because this is the highest, because we can do work which cannot be done in any other body. That is, we can know ourselves and know God.
And this is the master's path?
Yes.
On the path to higher consciousness?
Yes.
Okay. Our program is called On the Path to Higher Consciousness. It's a series produced by the Siddhartha Foundation for the Study of Higher Consciousness in Waltham, Massachusetts. On these programs, we explore the dimensions of man and his spirit in the New Age. My name is J. Richard Turner, and our guest today is Sant Kirpal Singh. Kirpal Singh, what is the master's path on the path to higher consciousness?
Master's path from the higher consciousness is to first to know about his own self as a conscious being, soul in the top of the ocean of all consciousness. Unless one knows himself, as all masters in the past told us, man knows thyself, who we are, what we are. We are conscious entities, having man body, the highest in all creation. In this it is possible to know oneself. Unless one man knows himself, he can know the higher consciousness. So this is a practical subject for which demonstration is given first, to know oneself. How to know oneself? It is one matter of not at the level of feelings or emotions or drawing inferences. It is purely a subject of self-analysis, knowing oneself and knowing God. Higher consciousness can only be experienced, or risen into, I would say, if our own consciousness is first all devoid of all outer coverings. So it is a matter of pure self-analysis how to rise above body consciousness. This is a demonstration of which is given by all masters who came in the past. Even now they are giving. So when man rises above body consciousness practically, he knows some power is controlling us in the body. So man body is the true temple of God in which we reside, as well as that higher power that controls us in the body also resides. There are so many apparatus in the man body, eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and two underneath, but we cannot run away out of it. Some power is controlling us in the body. That consciousness comes from you first, when we know ourselves by rising above body consciousness. The higher consciousness is had when we transcend into the beyond. To transcend into the beyond, that is when our attention is withdrawn from all outside and from the body below, and rise up to the heat of the soul, in the body, which is at the back of the two eyebrows. When he is there, just as it Saint Plutarch says, a man who is initiated into the mystery of the beyond, the soul has the same experience of leaving the body as it has at the time of death. It is not matter only. I mean, visualization or feelings or drawing inferences is a matter of pure self-analysis, rising over body consciousness, and to know oneself that he is the man who is driving, who is living the whole man body below, and who also unable thus to know the world outside. So this is the first step that the master given always to be done. Now when we know ourselves, this is that power controlling us is all consciousness. It is a drop in the ocean of all consciousness. But there macrocosm is in the microcosm. So we have got bodies in different planes to work in those, enable us to work in those planes. Physical body, we have got physical, we have got conscious. When we rise into, then we have got the astral body to work in the astral plane. Again, we have to rise further, we have got the causal body to work in the causal plane. And transcend all these three, rise into the spiritual planes, which is the whole consciousness. Up to three planes, it is not all consciousness, it is a mixture of its matter of different grades. So two consciousness rises when man rises above physical body, astral body, causal body. Now this is where he sees, because it is just like the upper water is just mixed with another further water. That is matter to be experienced, cannot express in words. When consciousness can experience up to first, second, third plane, beyond it is only going into or entering into the higher consciousness to lose outer identity. That higher consciousness can be expressed in words. Even all the feelings in the worldly way we can express in words, how can that consciousness, which is all consciousness, can be expressed in words? This is only an intellectual wrestling, I would say, because come to some conclusion, what is that, what is not that. So, Maharshi would say, well, we are, of course, after higher consciousness, but higher consciousness we have in the, what you say, in the mind ramifications, in mind was physical, astrally, and causally also. The three states of mind, physical, astral, and causal. Unless it rises above all these minds, we cannot have true consciousness, but that consciousness cannot be expressed in words, can be experienced. Even to rise above body consciousness, this is the thing to be experienced. This experience can be given by a demonstration by some master power who is competent, who rises above body consciousness day to day at his will and pleasure, and can give demonstration of that to others who come to him for that purpose. So first step is on the way to higher consciousness is to know oneself, to know conscious self, because it is we who are living the whole body here, physical body, as on the work of the astral color, when these, all these coverings are taken off, it rises into all consciousness, nothing to be expressed in words. People try to give some account of the matter inferences, but when it all rises into one mass, to whom to speak? They really say that, I see all consciousness, it means you have not seen it, because it explains it at the level of one, himself. If he sees the water mixing into the river, then how can he see this is river of the oneself? So all consciousness cannot explain words. This only drawing inferences. Our intellectual wrestling, we can give something, this is that, this is that. But that state is not, cannot be explained in words, only experience. Even ourselves, when we rise our physical body, that cannot be explained in words here. It is just to be born anew. You must be reborn. Or this ABC starts from when we learn to die, then it's in ourselves, that's the first step towards higher consciousness. But there are further steps in the astral plane too, causal plane too, and all these things, when we rise into the spiritual plane, and can get spread, though by reference are given. But all scriptures, they say so.
Kirpal Singhji, how does one become acquainted with his master?
The outer he is born the same as all other men are born, with the same privilege from God. Outer inner constitution the same. The only thing is, when a man gets a degree, a PhD, how can you recognize him? You recognize only when you sit by him and see day to day, well, he is above all. So, only criterion that we can have, as given by all masters, is he should be able to raise you above body consciousness, physical at least, by giving a demonstration. If you can give that God is light, when you rise above body consciousness, your single eye is open. When single eye is open, you see, it is all dark. It's all that you see is all light. So this is who can give you something on the start to, say, some capital to start with. This is the only criterion you can have. And moreover, by coming in His presence, you see your mind is still for a while. This is what I have come to, by parallel study of religions and personal experience, But about other diseases, each one has his own scope. The sense of beauty is the highest, but the only thing when you take this subject as a matter of intellectual wrestling, how can that be? Because until the mind is controlled, how do that the correct mind and intellect associate this for a while? Only then this our own consciousness comes up. What to speak of that consciousness? So others are unaware. This is how I take it. You do not whatever they some have recourse to psychology, relax. Others only give you by some what you say. By treatment like that for a while little light, but that is no light. Light is only without touching hand. It should raise you up above body consciousness and remove the darkness from before your eyes. And Master said, don't believe the words of a Master unless you see it for your own self what is what. That you bear testimony to it. So this is the criterion now, the Master. There is no outer bag but by his presence you will find radiation. And what is that the first thing the outer thing is, he will be able to give you a demonstration as to how to rise above body consciousness. Open the single eyes, see for yourself there is light.
What was your experience, your feeling, many, many decades ago when you met your Master?
Yes.
Did you experience something very special, and do you still feel that feeling?
I was in touch. Man who is in touch with everything, my tall, read all scriptures. There were very sweet stories of the beyond I did find, but how to have it, that was not possible. So it was a matter of pure self-analysis. So I prayed, God, oh God, is there anybody? After God works through somebody, demand and supply is in law of nature. Is there anybody, somebody, you must manifest. How can he see with the blind man? How can he recognize the man in eye? So God, one form appeared to me in my meditations. I took him as Guru Nanak. I was just there seeing with him in the beyond too, in the days of Mr. Tenin Wah. Then after about 7 years after, I physically met him. When he found me, he was the same. I told him why it was all delayed, why it was the opportune time. So when he met me, you see, he gave me demonstration. All labors, all efforts were done by me. Now the ABC starts from there. With words lasted and they did start. You know, there's a prayer, oh God, I'm grateful to you for you kept this secret from the worldly wise and given to the base.
Your work in India,
yes,
is very much based on the work of your Master, isn't it? The center which you have built,
yes,
in India is built on the principles which your Master taught to you.
No, I tell you, whatever my Master told me, that is the basic teachings of all Masters who came to the past. That's a parallel study of all scripture. And given the book in which I have given quotations from all scripture, East and West, the basic teaching has been the same all through, in a way has not been too. Of course, when time later on, for want of practical people, they had to regard to certain scopes separately. There are so many yoga, but each yoga has its own scope. This is natural yoga, which gives you a contact with the God into space and power direct by raising your body consciousness and you see it is there. So, the sun, you see the ray of the sun. You can go on from the ray, you reach the sun. So God, when you wanted and want and wish to be managed, it came into expression, there was vibration. And vibration is also two things, light and sound. So light and sound is the yoga of the attention. When it is contacted, when you rise above body consciousness, that is the power which is keeping us in the body and controlling all creation. So we come to know that when rise above body consciousness, Arimanathi itself said, the Arimanathi said, well, Mato, God nowhere in his room. And he was at death bed. A child came up. He was going to read, God is and no G-O-D-O-T God and no W, now what you are here. God is now here. He has my child, I see some power control. So this can be realized when you, at the time of death, rise above body consciousness, or even now, you become some power control. This is the physical cover which is, that is taken out, and this is the astral cover, the causal cover, and the super cover. Beyond that, there's the true Amihoma of the Father. The all masters are referred to it, and even beyond, ineffable and just, going into the God absolute. Guru Nanak has referred, all others have referred, he says, all saints rise above the highest super causal line, and further ineffable and sweet into the God which is absolute, absorbing them. He says, Guru Nanak resides there. All other saints are alike. So these are, this is about those who have gone to the highest. Others on their step. Some are risen up to the physical. They give only some mesmerism, some hypnotism, some psychology, and by trick of the pen, your fingers, they give something. That's all we do different to all. Some have access into the first astral plane. They can give you right to that. Second plane, he says, access, master will give you up to that stage. Up to third, like that. Unless you meet the highest master, the ultimate goal of the absolute, reaching into Dharam to Vrindavan, so their stage is gone. All master by parallel study you find, they have their stages. Shankara and others, you see, they define it all conscience, then they turn up to again that God in the expression power is what is wanted. And that is manifest in man. Shankara, now he believed in the absolute God, is all God, there is no soul. Then he came to a little allowance he made, yes, there is soul also. And the next man who followed him, he absolutely said, well, God absolutely cannot be this. We are not that. So they're covering up, you see, they're covering on the body. This is the one covering like of the prana and ananya kosh is also covering, you see. Jnana kosh is recovering too. But Jnana kosh is recovering, not the absolute. So rise into absolute, nobody, only reference and finish. Even the all conscious cannot be expressed in word. To the best I know, I have come to know. By the adversary of religion, too. So all conscious we can only infer by intellectual reason, that's all. And the masters of the higher order say, what? Oh man, seekers after God, you have just forgotten the God by intellectual reason. So as a matter of inference to draw, see and then say that is something else. Christ, another said, we see, and we say, and we have testimony to it. This all other masters say. Guru Nanak said, I speak as I am inspired by God. Sometimes people speak on the subconscious level. The subconscious level, what it is? It is experience of all past births. From that level they can talk. But if he has risen to the all conscious level, those words can only be, nothing can be said. People simply say, just say water is poured into another vessel, it becomes one. So this is a matter, to me it is inexpressible, and what I do, I have seen by further study of religion, to go into the actual God, who can know? Nobody. Nobody is in God and India. God into spiritual power, of course we have experience of that. That also according to the covers you have shaken out. By shaking your physical body you rise from consciousness. And then astral body is shaken and still. So causal body to shake is very difficult. That's the mental plane, my man. Little thought will bring a new world. It is only masters alone there. Absorb his whole attention in the light of some Christian take a further one. So it's very difficult inside. But anyhow, we do different to all what has they come to, people are deriving benefits, that's all it. Because you ask about the all consciousness, so I give it something what I have come to.
What part does the initiation play in this reaching of a new consciousness?
The first part is to rise over know oneself. One is conscious entity. Is that recovering? You see, three covenants are called physical, as in color. But when lamp is burning, there are three, four covenants, you shake off one, you see some light. When all problems are there, no life. Then you shake out the other, there's more life. Then you shake out the other, there's still more life. So all religions, you see, teach like that. Religion means the word, not social body. I mean to say, religion is bad religion to bind. Yes? Though you have gone up like that, they see what is like. Also God is like. In Lord Krishna also, everybody, by private study of religion at home, they all the basic teachings have been the same of all. So long as the people gave up there, the people derive full benefit of that. When they left the scene that to keep their teachings alive, all these social bodies of schools are came to be. So long as practical people were there of different degree, and it's referred to Shankar and the second man after it, so they did not. So Master do come from time to time to revive all this, their testimony also. But all that was so quick, you know. The man who flies in the air, only the other man who will fly in the air will know what he is.
On the path to higher consciousness,
yes.
What part does the initiation ceremony play?
Demonstration. No ceremony, no offering, no flowers, only like a school. Given a sitting, with little attention, give a boost, they will draw from outside and see light. They will attach in this way. No ceremony, no gift, nothing else. It is a gift of nature, you see. All gifts of nature are free. Air, water, sun. If all the gifts of nature, why should we pay for it?
Much of your work in India,
yes,
is in your center, which you built there.
No, all through India. All through India, in Pakistan too. All through India, I've got about 30 centers there, 40 centers. Here, also outside, about 120 or more than that centers in India.
What is the main work that you do at those centers?
Main work is usually give them some bread of life to the soul. Physically people give it, intellectually give it. I'm not against it, that's the first step. But what food is going to do to the soul? Soul is conscious entity. The bread of life and the water of life can only be conscious. And the higher conscience is already controlling us in this body. When it rises above, to give a contact with that is the initiation. To withdraw all attention from outside, raise up the body consciousness and come to the seat of the soul in the body, which is at the back, and then transcend into the beyond. It's just sun rising this and setting this and rising this way. Those are daily practice they do, they rise. For them, the death is a matter of joy. So God sends all, He chooses that where He manifests, He carries on the mission of God. Moreover, you find one thing. All those came here, most of them, these people began to, God sent them to know the people, there is God, who is the maker of all creation. He should be worshipped. But many will find all worship those messengers who came here. So messengers say carefully, I am not God, we are the messengers of God. God has sent me, Father has sent me. You see, I can know you. There is your God. But only you say we respect all other incarnations who came, who never take the name of God.
Can you envision for us the future for mankind, the spiritual life of man?
Yes. We, that's awakening coming up, you see? Coming by Easterners both. Men are fed up with their outer ways of, you see, ritualism and other things. They're very unhappy. Awakening rising about, you see? In the East and West too. And Golden Age will come from Iron Age, not far from heaven or actually. Now people are not see all what they have done, so unless they get something to say. We say God is light. Everybody says. But I have seen light. Then whatever say God is, I mean, liberating all creation. Have you seen? If not, then what is compared to? Like implantments in the body, right? And that you see, of course, whatever you perform in the way of knowing God, they are good actions. They show good results. But all these things, the doership is there. Unless the doership is there, then as you so shall you reap. Unless you become conscious co-worker of the divine plan, then say, he is the doer, I am not the doer. You lose all ego, then who will reap it? The city of songs. This has to be the goal of the master. They say, see, and they make others see. What did Christ say? I have come to let those people see or do not see. These are the references given in the scripture. For want of practical people, we are not able to write interpretation now. Guru Nanak says, they have entered within and they could not find the door. Christ also said, whatever you see, the old prophets wanted to see, they could not. Whatever you hear, prophet did not hear. You find in scripture all these things. The right interpretation of the scriptures can only be given by someone who has seen. So Master has favor of see and then say. There, I think from their level, all world is blind. Blind does not mean the terminology of the saints means not those who have got no eyes on the forehead, but those whose single eye is not open to see the light. Now you compare what you have been. We made models of man outside temples, churches, dome shaped and nose shaped other, put in light and symbols, light and sound principle, symbol of that and that. There's no model to show for the new man that such light is within you and such a sound is reverberating within you. But for want of practical people, they are stuck to there. And for God, the two temples of God in which He is, we is that and also God is that. God forbid, if any pinnacle of any church or temple and is broken, well, we are ready to sacrifice all two temples of God in on this. For those whose eyes are not open, for them all to judge them. We have respect for them, for them to know what is what. So for want of practical people, poor fellows forgotten this one. And God has been sending masters from time to time to revive his teachers. And this is not new truth, this is old thing. This is the basic truth given by all masters in the past.
Dr. Paul Singhji, could you give us a brief meditation now so that our audience, as they're listening at home, could join with us?
So these meditations given every morning here in hundreds. Today I think about 600 people are there.
Morning.
Every time 500, 400, 1,000 also. This is every morning. Yeah. Everywhere where I go, that requires at least half an hour. Because we are not accustomed to it to be our attention to go outside.
Oh,
it is quite practical. People have had their feeling and they testify they have seen this and that. Not it is that one mesmerizes or hypnotizes somebody to say all this is that. No. Each man has his own experience.
What I was hoping that we might do is to have you just have our audience close their eyes for a few minutes and you could give them some thoughts to meditate on.
Well, I can tell you what I've been explaining every day wherever I go. First thing is our physical body should be still. Because man body is the temple of God. And we desire can also God control our desire. Outward expression of soul is attention. The attention went its way to the outgoing faculties work. The world also seems to live. But that when that attention is withdrawn from there, this is what is wanted to be done. So withdraw your attention from all outside. When a man is dying, you see, he doesn't recognize anybody who comes to him. When a man is absorbed some thought, somebody calls him once, twice, he is not here. said, why are you not going to reply to my question? He said, I was involved in something else.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was a radio interview with Master recorded at the Beacon Street Motor Hotel in Brookline, Massachusetts, on October 14, 1972. Our reader this morning is Scott Stewart. Go ahead, Scott.
Today we will begin reading one of my favorite books by Master, A Great Saint, Baba Jamal Singh, His Life and Teachings. Before we get to the first section, I'll read a very famous quote. Today, there is a great awakening beginning. Some have got the answer, some have not. But the search to solve the mystery of life has been born all over the world. The day that question arises in the mind is the greatest day of one's life. For once it is born, it does not succumb until it is satisfied. So make your life an example of the teachings you follow. Live up to them. If you have a strong desire to get it, then God Himself will make the arrangements for you. By the way, I'm reading from a PDF version on our website. We come to part one, The Great Tradition, titled The God Way. The way back to God is not of man's making, but of God's. And it is free from artifice and artificiality. God draws man back to himself through his chosen elect, the God-man, to whom the secret of the path, the God-way, is revealed directly or made manifest by some Sant Sadguru for the benefit of the people. The masters, the messiahs, the teachers, and the prophets all the world over fall into two categories with a separate mission assigned to each. There are, on the one hand, those whose sole purpose is to keep the world going harmoniously. And on the other hand, there are those who are commissioned to lead back souls who are ripe for homegoing and yearn for an early return to the source spiritual from which they parted long ago before drifting downwards to the material plane. In the first category fall all the reformers, and in the second such saints and sadhus as are competent to reveal the knowledge of God and to make manifest the power of God in man. The process of ascent back to the source is just the reverse of that of descent down to the physical plane, and one has therefore to reintegrate himself, to gather all his wandering wits at the still point of the soul, in between and behind the two eyes, where time and timelessness intersect. Before the spirit comes to its own and launches upon the sea of life, for an inner journey homeward, this in fact has been the sole theme of all sages and seers everywhere. None of them, however, wanted to set up any new creed or institutionalized religion. While referring to the existence of so many religions and creeds in the world, all bristling with bewildering theories and conflicting dogmas, Hazur Baba Sawan Singh Ji Maharaj used to remark, "There are already so many wells all over. Why should one dig any more pitfalls and make confusion worse confounded?" God made man in his own image, and man made religions, each in his own image, and in his zeal made fetishes of them all. True religion, in its inception, is fresh and simple, like a newly born babe bubbling over with vital life. But in course of time, like any other thing, it develops into an institution, and with that it begins to deteriorate, tends to lose its native vital elasticity, born of the living touch of the master spirit, and gradually comes to acquire a socio-economic appearance. Instead of serving as a silken bond of love between man and man, it becomes a source of constant strife, rancor, and ill will, tearing class from class and nation from nation. When the cup of human misery is filled to the brim, then comes the Savior with a message of hope, redemption, and fulfillment for strife-torn humanity. He tries to dress up the festering social wounds and preaches oneness and equality to man in order to restore the equilibrium in the scales of human values. Alongside this, his main objective is to save human souls for a higher purpose, a true life of the spirit as distinguished from that of the flesh. Such indeed has been the goal of great masters like Zoroaster, Mahavira, Buddha, Christ, Muhammad, Kabir, and Nanak, each in his own time, according to the then prevailing conditions and people's aspirations, for they always try to lead them from the line of least resistance and dole out the basic goodness in terms that may readily appeal to and fit in with their mental makeup for this, or a step higher in the process of evolution or unfolding of the spirit. This is what saints do for the general run of mankind, deriving their inspiration from the great reservoir of the spirit within, which is the same for all. The rich heritage. In the religious thought of modern India, the period from the middle of the 14th to the middle of the 15th century is one of outstanding importance. It is an era in which an attempt was made to reorient religion and present it in its simplest form, the form of true faith, universal love, and single-minded devotion, as against the rigors of priestly ritualism and fanaticism leading to intolerance and bigotry. Among the great teachers of the period, we find figures like Brahmananda, with his principal disciples drawn from various walks of life, Rajapipa, Ravi Das, the cobbler, Saina, the barber, Kabir, the weaver, Dana, the jot, Narhari, Sukha, Padmavati, Susura, and his wife. Vayamacharya, the famous exponent of the Krishna cult, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu of Nadia in Bengal, with his characteristic stress on Hari Boli, or chanting of the Lord's name, Namdev, the calico printer in Maharashtra, and the great Kabir and Nanak in the north. None of them laid much stress on idol worship and observance of outer religious forms and symbols. Self-purity, love, and inner yearning were their constant themes. Namdev said, "Love for him who filleth my heart shall never be sundered." Nama applied his heart to the true name. "As the love between a child and his mother, so is my soul imbued in God." Kabir likewise said, "It is needless to ask of a saint the caste to which he belongs. The barber has sought God, the washerman and the carpenter. Even Ravi Das was a seeker after God. The Rishi Swapacha was a tanner by caste. Hindus and Muslims alike have achieved that end, where remains no mark of distinction." Again, he proclaimed, "It is not by fasting and repeating the prayers and the creed that one goeth to heaven. The inner veil of the temple of Mecca is in man's heart, if the truth be known." So spoke Nanak, "Abide in the pure amidst the impurity of the world. Thus shalt thou find the way to religion." This movement, however, attained its greatest heights at the hands of Kabir from 1398 to 1518, and his younger contemporary, Nanak, 1469 to 1539. Both of them rose above the fetters of the world and transcended religious barriers, and so were acclaimed alike by Hindus and Muslims both. Their teachings mainly centered around God and man and the relationship between the two. Both of them were exponents of the Surat Shabd Yoga, yoga of the sound current or communion with the Holy Word, and their writings extol this as the crown of life. If we study the essential core of any of the religious teachings in the pristine purity and truth, as it appeared in the original sayings of the masters, what they themselves actually practiced, and what they gave to their chosen disciples, Gurumukhs or apostles, we cannot fail to get an insight into the reality that they were one and all, in one form or another, votaries of the transcendental seeing and hearing, no matter at what level, though to the layman, they gave their subtle thoughts in the form of parables only, as otherwise they would not hear and much less understand their teachings. Such world teachers serve as beacon lights in the stormy sea and try to save humanity from floundering in the quicksands. Children of light as they are, they come to dispel the darkness of the soul and are naturally called guru, the dispeller of darkness, darkness born of ignorance, of the true values of life. They have unbounded love for all religions and religious heads, and have equal respect for all the scriptures. Theirs is a universal fold that takes in one long sweep, the entire humanity with all its variegated patterns and colors, and steeps them equally in the love of God. Kabir tells us in this context, all our sages are worthy of veneration, but by devotion is for one who has mastered the word. He further tells us that he, with his divine message, incarnated from age to age for the benefit of the people, he appeared in all the four yugas, or cycles of time. First is Sat Sukrat, then as Karna Mai, again as Manindar, and finally as Kabir in Kali Yuga, the present phase of time. Guru Nanak also ceaselessly tells us of the great importance and supreme efficacy of the method of Surat Shab Yoga as the means of salvation. Like a lotus standing aloft out of the muddy pool, or like a royal swan that flies high and dry out of water, so does one, by communing with the word, cross unscathed the fearsome sea of life. This, in brief, is the grand message coming down to us in the dawn of creation, chanting out the path Godward. All the Indian saints and many Christian mystics practiced the inner science and contacted individual souls with the saving life within. The master has a footnote there, and it says, for fuller details on this connection, the reader is referred to the book Nam, a Word, by the same author, a study that gives a full account of the teachings of the masters in all ages. Time and again, as people forget the reality, God's grace materializes itself in a human body, called a saint, to guide erring humanity in the time-honored eternal way. It is the privilege and the prerogative that the Most High confers, and this authority is passed on according to his behests. The wind bloweth where it listeth, and no one can lay down or predict any rules of succession, place, or time. This rich heritage goes from eye to eye and refuses to be bound to traditional gadis, so-called sanctified seats and sacred places, nor does it depend on human sanctions of temporal or clerical character. Guru Nanak, with his seat at Kartarpur, passed on his spiritual heritage to Bhai Lena, who as Guru Angad shifted to Kadur Sahib, while the successor, Guru Amar Das, was obliged to transfer his seat to Goindwal. With Guru Ram Das, Amritsar came into being and later on became the headquarters of Guru Arjan. Thus we see that there is nothing special about places as such. They owe their sanctity to the sanctifying influence of the saints, who pass their time at one place or another. All is holy where devotion kneels. It is not the places that grace men, but men the places. Rediscovering lost strands. The stream of life rolls on ceaselessly, an endless course of time. The power of timeless appears and disappears in the realm of relativity. Before proceeding with the life sketch of Baba Jamal Singh Ji, it would be worth our while to have a peep into the background that made him what he was. It was indeed the power of Swamiji that flowed through him in whatever he did and wherever he worked, for he was wholly lost to himself and given over to the divine in him. In order to understand things in their proper perspective and link up the history of our spiritual heritage, we will have to go back to Guru Gobind Singh, the last of the 10 gurus in the line of succession to Guru Nanak. The Rani, queen of one Ratan Rao Peshwa, accompanied by Bhai Nandlal, came to the feet of Guru Gobind Singh for refuge. Again, Master has another footnote. Guru Gobind Singh traveled widely, penetrating the Himalayas in the north and going to Deccan in the south. During his extensive travels, he met and lived with the ruling family of the Peshwas and initiated some of its members into the inner science. It is said that one Ratnagar Rao of the Peshwa family was initiated and authorized to carry on the work by Guru Gobind Singh. Sham Rao Peshwa, the elder brother of Baji Rao Peshwa, the then ruling chief, who must have contacted Ratnagar Rao, showed a remarkable aptitude for the spiritual path and made rapid headway. In course of time, this young scion of the royal family settled in Hathras, a town 33 miles away from Agra in Uttar Pradesh, and came to be known as Tulsi Sahib, 1763 to 1843. The famous author of Gat Ramayana, the science of the inner life principle, pervading alike in man and nature, the Vita Lampada of spirituality, was passed on by Tulsi Sahib to Swamiji, Swami Shiv Dayal Singh Ji, 1818 to 1878. The link between Tulsi Sahib of Hathras and Swamiji of Agra is likely to be overlooked, but there can be little doubt of it. From the manuscript account of Baba Saran Singh, the Jivan Charitar, Swamiji Maharaj by Chacha Bartap Singh, and the book entitled Correspondence with Certain Americans by Sri S.D. Maheshwari, we learn that Swamiji's parents were the disciples of Hathras Saint and frequently visited him at his home for darshan and attended his discourses whenever he visited Agra. It was he who named the sons of Lala Dilwali Singh Sith, that is, Shiv Dayal Singh, Brindaban, and Partap Singh. Before the birth of the eldest child, he prophesied that a great saint was about to manifest himself in their home, and after his birth, he told the parents that they need no longer come to Hathras, for the Lord Almighty had come in their midst. And again, Master has another footnote to where that correspondence took place. He continues, the Hathras saint took a keen and lively interest in casting the life of Swamiji in his own mold. He initiated the young child at a very early age, and Swamiji, on the last day of his life, told his disciples that he had been practicing the inner science from the age of six. Swamiji's veneration for the Hathras saint becomes abundantly clear from his life. He held Tulsi Sahib's disciples in great respect, honoring among them especially Sadhu Girhari Das, whom he supported during his last years. Once when the Sadhu fell ill at Lucknow, Swamiji hurried there from Agra and helped him to contact the inner sound current with which he had lost touch, owing presumably to some past karma before his death. Again, Swamiji very often gave to his followers instances from the life of his great predecessor to teach them the importance of virtues like patience, forbearance, forgiveness, and godliness. Before his passing away in 1843, Tulsi Sahib bequeathed his spiritual heritage to Swamiji. For 6 months, Tulsi Sahib lay in a state of samadhi, spiritual trance, lost in divine consciousness. It was only after Swamiji had paid him a visit that Tulsi Sahib left his mortal frame. Baba Garib Das, one of the earliest disciples of Tulsi Sahib, confirmed that the spiritual mantle had been entrusted to his master, the Munshi Ji, as Swamiji was then known on account of his great learning in Persian. Swamiji was to spend 15 years of his life in almost incessant abhyasa, spiritual practice, in a small closet. After the passing away of Tulsi Sahib, Swamiji continued to visit Hathras to honor the memory of his preceptor. On one such occasion, we are told, when Swamiji went to Hathras, the heat was so great that his disciples Rai Saligram and Baba Jiwan Lal had to carry him between themselves over the last lap of the journey where no transport was available and the ground was very uneven. The great respect that Swamiji displayed for the Granth Sahib, embodying the teachings of Guru Nanak and his successors, seems ultimately to have been derived from family tradition. The recitation of the six scriptures was an article of faith in the family. His father, Lala Dilwali Singh, a Sahib Hari Khatri Sikh, belonging to the order of Nanak Pandis, was devotedly attached to Japji, Rao Ras, and Sukhmani Sikh scriptures, which he read from day to day with great religious fervor and deep reverence. A copy of Sukhmani in Persian script in the hand of Swamiji's grandfather, Seth Maluk Chand, at one time Diwan of Dholpur State, is still preserved in the archives of Swami Bhaj. The essence of Sant Mat thus came to permeate the very being of Swamiji. In later years, at least on one occasion while discoursing on Jyaki at his home in Punigali, Swamiji clearly acknowledged his spiritual debt to the Punjab, referring to Nanak and his successors as the fountainhead of spirituality, and to Paltu Sahib and Tulsi Sahib as great subsequent exponents of the inner science. We will deal with this incident while tracing the life of Baba Jaimal Singh Ji in the succeeding chapter. His younger brother, Rai Brindaban Singh, a postmaster in Ajodhya, was a close disciple of Baba Badholas of Mahat Dera Rano Pali in Ajodhya. He, like his elder brother, Shri Dayal Singh, had a firm faith in and a great regard for Gurbani. He was continually engaged in the sweet remembrance of the Lord, Bishambhar, whose praises he chanted with a beautiful refrain, as is evident from his compositions under the caption, Wahiguru, Nama, in his Urdu book, Bahar-e-Brindaban. O Brindaban, leave outside all else and do the japa of the great name Wahiguru. It shall not only purify your body, mind, and soul, but give you salvation, peace, and happiness. Besides, again, we learn that when the end of Lala Wali Singh drew near, his son, Shri Dayal Singh, Swamiji, sitting near his bedstead, began reciting the Gurbani so as to keep his father's attention steadily fixed therein at the crucial time. Gyani Partap Singh, basing himself on Baba Bola Singh's Radhaswami Mat Darpan, tells us in his study of world religions how Swamiji, in course of time, became a frequent visitor to the holy Sikh shrine of Mai Tan at Agra, commemorating the visit of the ninth guru, Tegh Bahadur, where Sant Maj Parkash, originally known as Didar Singh, of the Nirmala order and a great Sanskrit scholar, used to give lucid expositions of the Gurbani or Sikh scriptures. It was because of his close association with Sant Maj Parkash that Swamiji learned Gurbani and its significance in Surat Shabd Yoga, and he began using this very shrine for his discourses on Gurbani. Chacha Partap Singh, in his life sketch, has given in rapturous terms a graphic description of one such discourse. It was about 8 in the morning that the Maharaj one day went to the Gurdwara in Mai Tan. After reciting a Shabd or two from the Granth Sahib, he began expounding the subject in a rich and sonorous voice. The sublime thoughts seemed to flow from him like endless waves from an inexhaustible reservoir within. I was so overwhelmed by the sweep of his words that all at once I felt lifted above the body and bodily environments, lost to all that was of the world. From that very day, I was changed man altogether, with an intense longing for the divine, fully convinced of the greatness of Swamiji and his holy mission. After some time, Swamiji shifted the venue of his teaching to his private apartments in Punigali and continued his discourses from the Granth Sahib. The copy he used was brought by Hazur Sawant Singh Ji from Agra and is still treasured in the archives of Dera Baba Jaimal Singh at Bayaz in the Punjab. This system of dressing private gatherings at his home continued for quite a long time. But on Basant Panchmi Day in the year 1861, the floodgates of Surat Shabd Yoga was revived in this age by Kabir and his contemporary Guru Nanak, and firmly entrenched by his successors in the Gurbani, were now thrown open by Swamiji to the general public. Lest there still be any doubt lingering in the minds of the skeptics, Swamiji, who till the last continued initiating people into the secret of the traditional five melody Panch Shabd Dhunkar Dhun, significantly enough, on the last day of his departure from the earth plane, cleared his position beyond the least shadow of a doubt by declaring, "My path was the path of Sat Nam and Anami Nam. The Radhaswami faith is of Saligram's making, but let it also continue and let the satsang flourish and prosper." Among Swamiji's trusted and devoted disciples was Rai Saligram, Sahib Bahadur, properly known in later times as Hazur Maharaj, after he came to occupy the spiritual headship. While Hazur Maharaj, after the passing away of Swamiji, continued his discourse in Peepal Mandi in the heart of Agra City. Partap Singh, the younger brother of Swamiji, generally called Chacha Sahib, respected uncle, carried on the work in Radhaswami Garden, 3 miles away from Agra City. Another disciple, Baba Jaimal Singh Ji, one of the earliest and most spiritually advanced disciples of Swamiji, as directed by the great master himself, settled down at Vyas in the Punjab to revitalize the work of spirituality and to repay, in some measure, the debt the world owed to Guru Nanak. We will now examine in some detail the life and work of this distinguished spiritual son of Swamiji. Part 2. Babaji, a brief biography. Early years. It was in 1838 that Baba Jaimal Singh was born in the village of Kuman in the Gurdaspur district of the Punjab to a family of pious Sikh cultivators. Kuman was as any other village in the region. If it was distinguished in any way, it was by his having a shrine known as Dera Baba Namdev in memory of the great sage Namdev, who many centuries earlier had spent his last days there. Legend holds that when the saint arrived and wished to pray inside the local temple, he was refused admission because he was an outcast. Undeterred, he went and sat down behind the back wall and was soon lost in samadhi. The Lord, unhappy at the insult offered to his disciple, turned the face of the temple toward the place where Namdev sat, and all the priests and Brahmins fell at his feet asking for forgiveness. It is from that day that the local village is said to have taken the name of Guman, a Punjabi word signifying to turn around. The village folk visited the shrine to offer devotion, and many a wandering sadhu often came there to pay his homage to the great sage, Bhai Jod Singh and Bibi Daya Kaur, the parents of Jaimal, were frequent visitors, and the latter, while there, would often pray for a saintly son. Great souls seldom come unannounced, and one night, Bibi Daya Kaur was visited by the great Namdev in a dream, who told her that her prayers were granted. And 10 months later, Jaimal was born amidst domestic festivity and rejoicing. The history of a saint is the history of a soul's pilgrimage. It is a story which, to be spiritually complete, covers the innumerable years and countless lives. The final enlightenment may seem sudden, but its preparatory stages are long and arduous. Like Buddha and Jesus, Jaimal showed remarkable spiritual precocity from a very early age. When visiting the shrine of Baba Namdev with his parents, unlike other children of his age, he would sit calm and attentive. And even as a child of 3, he would repeat many of the verses he heard at spiritual discourses. The villagers wondered at his prodigiousness. He was soon nicknamed Bal Sadhu, or Child Saint. And his rural admirers pressed his parents to give him an opportunity for education. So when Jaimal was 5, he was put in the charge of Bhai Kam Das, a learned Vedantist who lived close by. In those times, education in India did not concern itself with training for a vocation. It was preeminently a mental and spiritual discipline based on the study of the scriptures. The young child displayed keen aptitude for it and soon mastered the Gurmukhi script. Within a year, he had already read carefully the Punj Granthi, or 5 basic Sikh scriptures, including the Japji, the Sukhmani Sahib, the Rao Ras. In another 6 months, he had the key passages of these spiritual treasures by heart, and by the age of 7, he had grown into an excellent bhati, or one who could recite the scriptures in a melodious way and with professional mastery. The next year was spent in studying the Dasam Granth, the scriptures compiled by the last of the Sikh gurus. So we have come to the end of our reading for the day. We'll pick up where we left off the next time I read. We were reading a great saint, Baba Jaimal Singh. Master, we thank thee for everything that you provide for us, especially these wonderful scriptures that you have given us to rely on, to remain at one in your heart. And as always, we pray that we live up to what you ask of us, to be chaste and pure, ever at one with thy will. Thank you, Father.
And thank you, Scott, for reading for us. There were 94 people at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So God in man unites us in such a relation which never broken, even after leaving the body. So we have to just judge how far we have gone. There is no question of high or low, you see, rich or poor. You see? Who have done it?